We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parrish Show.
All right, I'm here. My name is Gary Parrish. Brad Carson is in studio producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles. No disruptions. Daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding rings. And I hope you're a person who can be encouraged by encouraging numbers, because if you're a Memphis basketball fan, I've got some encouraging numbers for you. I know Saturday night was disappointed. I was disappointed right there with you. The nice effort, just a little, came up a little short.
That's what she said.
But I got encouraging numbers for you that are... perhaps turn your frown upside down, if you have a frown at all. Going to get into it momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. Around 4:25, Mark Giannotto is going to join me. He's the Commercial Appeal's lead sports columnist. Talk Tigers with him. Talk Grizzlies with him. Because you're not going to believe this. The Grizzlies blew another double-digit lead, this time to Oklahoma City. They now have 12 double-digit blown leads this season, which means 30% of their losses are games in which they led by double digits. Now, everybody blows double-digit leads, I guess. But that seems excessive. If you just hold on to those double-digit leads, and again, they wouldn't. That's not the way the NBA works. But they'd be 37-28 right now, as opposed to embarrassing right now. Oklahoma City closed on a 23-6 run in the final 6:23. We'll talk Grizzlies and Tigers. Mark Giannotto going to be here around 4:25. Finish that segment. I'll do four notable stories, 4:44, at which point I will discuss four previously undiscussed stories among them. Tennessee handled Kentucky no problem on Saturday afternoon. Beat the Wildcats by 19, and now the Vols are back on track to be a number one seed on Selection Sunday. We'll talk UT around 4:44. Speaking of likely number one seeds, Gonzaga closed its regular season Saturday with a 14-point win at St. Mary's. Zags finished 16-0 in the WCC, all 16 wins coming by double digits. It's one of the greatest runs through a league in the history of college basketball. I'll give you the numbers to back that a little later on this hour. The biggest college basketball story of the weekend, though, wasn't actually the result of any game. It was a post-game incident involving Utah State and Nevada. Ugly scene. I'll tell you about that a little later on this hour. And I talked a little last week about how you could just flip a few possessions from close Memphis games and change the entire season. An even better example of this is Clemson. Clemson has now played 2 1-point games and 3 2-point games and lost all of them. They would be a top 25 team with 5 possessions flipped over the other way. As it is, they're a bubble team. I'll give you the details during four notable stories, 4:44, 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always. Then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. Got a lot to get to, but I wanted to start with Tiger basketball because the Tigers played arguably their biggest March game in 5 years on Saturday night. They were 9.5-point underdogs against a nationally ranked Cincinnati team. They jumped to a 3-0 lead, got off to a nice start, and then trailed basically the entire rest of the game, sometimes by double digits. And yet they cut it to 69-67 with 26 seconds left. And then with 4 seconds remaining, the Tigers had the ball under the own goal. UC's up 71-69. So Jeremiah Martin was going to have a chance to win the game. Mick Cronin also understood this. So he made it clear to his Bearcats, just do whatever you have to do. Even jump the passing lane, do whatever you have to do to keep the ball away from Jeremiah Martin. Isaiah Maurice threw it that way anyway, and I don't blame him. But Logan Johnson then stepped in and stole the ball, and that was that. Cincinnati wins 71-69. Memphis did not get off a shot. So they dropped to 18-12 overall, 10-7 in the AAC. But the Tigers actually rose from 71st to 69th at KenPom, so that's nice. They're now 53rd in the NCAA's net rankings. They're now 62nd in the Sagarin ratings. And, yes, their at-large bids are now dead. It no longer matters what they do from an NCAA tournament perspective. Unless they win the AAC tournament, they will not make the NCAA tournament. And that wasn't necessarily true on Saturday morning. We talked about it last week. But it was true by Saturday night, despite the encouraging performance. There's now nothing Memphis can do to make the NCAA tournament other than win the automatic bid that the American Athletic Conference tournament provides. And yet, Penny Hardaway and Jeremiah Martin both sounded upbeat after the loss. And the reason, I think, is because they know that that was an encouraging performance. They know that they played well. You know, not many teams are going to go into Cincinnati and win. It's why Cincinnati, you know, has a real chance to win an outright AAC title this season, even though 3 days ago they were trailing a Houston team that was ranked in the top 10. You know, Houston takes a home loss to UCF. Cincinnati holds on against Memphis. Houston still has to go to Cincinnati. You know, if you were trying, they'll probably end up sharing the league title, Houston and Cincinnati. But if you had to pick one or the other, which one's got a better chance to actually win it outright, it's probably Cincinnati right now. And Memphis has played that team twice. And they led them by double digits with about 15 minutes to go inside FedEx Forum. Lost, but led them by double digits with about 15 minutes remaining inside FedEx Forum. And then had the ball 4 seconds to play, where a Jeremiah Martin three-pointer, the same type of shot we've watched go in game after game after game after game for more than a month, a Jeremiah Martin three-pointer would have won the game at the buzzer. He never got the shot off. It was a turnover. But still, they were right there. And Penny and Jeremiah both spoke about that after the game. Like, we know we can beat that team. And if you know you can beat that team that's probably about to be, at the very least, shared conference champions, then you know you can beat anybody in the league. Especially inside FedEx Forum. And this is something we've been talking about for a while. And I even tweeted it on January 27th after Memphis beat UCF by 20 points inside FedEx Forum. That's a UCF team that's now ranked in the AP poll, by the way. So Memphis beats UCF inside FedEx Forum. And I tried to explain on Twitter how this is why, no matter how the rest of the regular season goes, barring injuries to key players and stuff like that, of course, Memphis is going to have a real shot to make the NCAA tournament until they're eliminated from the NCAA tournament. And the reason is because the AAC tournament is inside FedEx Forum, and I'm not trying to tell you that Memphis is the best team in the AAC, because I don't think they are. But I am trying to tell you that Memphis will not be a significant underdog to anybody inside FedEx Forum when that tournament gets here. They just won't. It'd be different if the ACC tournament was being played inside FedEx Forum, because Duke would be a significant favorite over Memphis in that building. So would Virginia. So would Carolina. It'd be different if you play in the Big Ten tournament inside FedEx Forum, because Michigan, Michigan State would be significant favorites over Memphis inside FedEx Forum. But the AAC doesn't have those teams. It's got some good teams, but I don't think any great teams. I think Cincinnati's really good. I think Mick is tremendous. Team's good. Team's not great. They don't overwhelm you physically from a talent perspective. I think Houston's good, really good. They're not great. Kelvin's great. I don't think his team's great. I think his team's really good, deserving of everything they've got this season, including game day down in Houston this past weekend. But they don't overwhelm you from a talent perspective. Duke's the one with 3 lottery picks. Cincinnati's not. Houston's not. There's probably not a first-round pick on either one of those teams. And so the point I tried to make is that, yes, Memphis is a flawed team. Penny inherited a program that finished 161st at KenPom last season, started this season 107th. And even though he's now got him up to 69th, which is nice, they're still not the best team in the league. They might be next season when perhaps multiple five-star recruits plus DJ Jeffries enrolls. But right now it sort of is what it is. And the season has been a season filled with overachievements based on the computers, based on the eyeball test. Memphis has been better than it was supposed to be. That's undeniable. Significantly better than they were last season and better than they were supposed to be this season. Again, right now, Memphis is 69th at KenPom. Last season, they finished 161st. So they're nearly 100 spots better than they were last season. So if you hear anybody trying to point to this record and last season's record and compare the two, just know that the person you're talking to isn't that bright, because there's no comparison between the quality of this basketball team and the quality of last season's basketball team. It's not comparable. And so even if Memphis isn't the best team in the AAC, Memphis is not going to be a significant favorite, I mean underdog, against anybody in the American Athletic Conference tournament. I proclaimed that back on January 27th. And on that day and any other day I brought it up going forward, Memphis fans wouldn't push back, because that's the type of thing Memphis fans want to hear. But you would hear Tennessee fans push back, Houston fans push back, Cincinnati fans push back. And yet now here we are in the final week of the regular season, and the numbers are the numbers. Like, here's the thing. You don't have to take my word for it. Sometimes I will ask you to just take my word for it. Like when we're having conversations about why there needed to be a coaching change last season, I'd lay it out, and then I'd say, just take my word for it. I'm right on this. Trust me. You don't have to trust me when it comes to this, what I'm saying now, which is that Memphis will not be a significant underdog against anybody inside FedEx Forum in the American Athletic Conference Tournament. The numbers are the numbers. And so here are the numbers. I went to Sagarin this morning, which is one of the respected computer rankings formulas in college basketball. Really, when you hear people cite computers in college basketball, they're going to cite KenPom and Sagarin, and now this season, because it's new, the net. And at Sagarin, right now, Houston's number 17, Cincinnati's number 27, UCF is number 32, and then fourth in the league is Memphis at number 62. Now, there's clearly a pretty significant drop between Houston, Cincinnati, UCF, and Memphis. Cincinnati's only 10 spots lower than Houston. UCF's only 5 spots lower than Cincinnati. And then Memphis is 30 spots lower than UCF. So according to the computers, yes, there's a difference between those teams. I'm not denying that. It's why Houston, Cincinnati, and UCF are all projected to make the NCAA tournament, and Memphis has now no at-large opportunity. But the way Sagarin works is they assign a number, a value, to each team. And so don't get too caught up on the number 17 or Cincinnati's ranked 27th or UCF is ranked 32nd or Memphis is ranked 62nd, because it's the other numbers that matter. Houston has a number of 87.46. That's what the computer spits out, 87.46. Now, these won't mean anything without context, but I'll explain it momentarily. Cincinnati's is 85.91. UCF's is 85.06. Memphis is 80.48. And the way it works is that you take that number. You want to find out what more or less a point spread is going to be on a game. You take the higher number, subtract the lower number, and then you add 3.13 for home court advantage, or subtract 3.13 the teams on the road. In other words, let's just start at the top. Houston's the highest-rated Sagarin team in the American Athletic Conference. In other words, the toughest matchup Memphis could possibly play in the AAC tournament is Houston, according to the computers. Again, their number's 87.46. If you take the 87.46 and you subtract Memphis's value of 80.48 and then subtract the 3.13 that Memphis gets for home court advantage in the American Athletic Conference tournament, what you get is a point spread of Houston minus 3.85 over Memphis. Now, you can round it down to 3.5, round it up to 4, but that's what you're looking at. 3.5 or a full-point favorite over Memphis inside FedEx Forum. That's it. That's the best team. Do the same thing with Cincinnati. Take Cincinnati's 85.91. subtract Memphis's 80.48, then subtract the 3.13 that Memphis is going to get for home court advantage, what you get is Cincinnati minus 2.3 over Memphis inside FedEx Forum. You can round it up to 2.5, take it down to 2.0, but that's roughly what you're looking at. Cincinnati by about 2 and 2.5 over Memphis inside FedEx Forum. Do the same thing with UCF. Take its 85.06, subtract Memphis's 80.48, subtract the 3.13 that Memphis is going to get for home court advantage inside FedEx Forum, and what you get is UCF minus 1.44 over Memphis. Move it up to 1.5, take it down to 1.0, or remember that oddsmakers, we've already had a Memphis UCF game played inside FedEx Forum, January 27th. Memphis won it by 20. Oddsmakers made Memphis a favorite in that game, despite what the computer numbers show. So I think, actually, if Memphis plays UCF, Memphis would be favored over UCF. So really, there's only two teams that would be favored over Memphis in the AAC tournament. Any combination of games, two teams that'd be favored over Memphis. One's Houston, one Cincinnati. And neither, according to Sagarin, would be more than a four-point favorite over Memphis. Like I said, more than a month ago, no matter really what happens between then and now, nobody will be a significant favorite over Memphis.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
By FedEx Forum. And it's why, if you're Penny Hardaway, you can be upbeat after what happened Saturday night. If you're Jeremiah Martin, you can be upbeat after what happened Saturday night. Because take almost any other team in the country and point to Saturday night's game and tell them, if you win this, your at-large hopes remain alive and even get like somewhat realistic. But if you lose it, it's over with. For any other team in the country that was placed in that situation and then lose the game, you're devastated. Because in most other leagues, if you're going to finish fifth in the American Athletic Conference or your conference, you're not going to be hosting anything on your home floor. And there's at least one or two or maybe more teams that are just significantly better than you. It's not the case for Memphis in this league. Houston's better than Memphis. Don't get it twisted. So is Cincinnati. UCF might be too. Certainly has a better resume. That's why one's projected to make the field, one doesn't have a chance. But none of them are going to be significant favorites over Memphis inside FedEx Forum. So if you're Penny Hardaway, Jeremiah Martin, or anybody else in that locker room, you can go, it's too bad. We were a bucket short, either because we missed shots or turned it over, or that technical foul on Rainier Thornton. A whole lot of stuff went on. And it's too bad that the at-large stuff's now off the table. But now, still, to get to the NCAA tournament, even if we're the fifth seed, we got to beat Tulane. We could do that, no problem. You'd think, no problem. Beat Temple. Already done that once inside FedEx Forum. Don't know why we wouldn't be able to do that again. We'll be favored to win the game. And then we're in the semifinals against somebody, right? And at this point, it could be Cincinnati or Houston. And if you play Cincinnati, you go, we already played them in this building once. We were up double digits with 15 to go. Then we played them at their place. We had the ball 4 seconds to go with a chance to win. And they're probably not going to be more than about a 2 or 3 point favorite over us anyway. Let's go. And if it's not Cincinnati, it's Houston. And what you say is, a team we already beat, Central Florida, just got through beating them. And they're not going to be more than about a 3 or 4 point favorite over us. Let's go. I'm not telling you it's probable. I'm just telling you it's realistic. And so that's why Jeremiah Martin and Penny Hardaway could both be optimistic, because they understood the effort wasn't good enough Saturday night to win at Cincinnati. But that same effort might be good enough to win, if you have to win four games inside FedEx Forum next week. And it's why, barring an upset, regardless of what happens elsewhere around the league and even what happens inside FedEx Forum this weekend when Tulsa's there, barring an upset, we are going to get to a point where Memphis is in the semifinals because they're going to be favored in their first game and in the quarterfinals, no matter the opponent. Barring an upset, Memphis is going to be in the semifinals in a very winnable game with an opportunity to then play the following day for an automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. That's fun stuff. And the numbers and the fact that that tournament's going to be played inside Memphis' home building make the rest of this season, however long it lasts, more interesting than it otherwise would be. I'll talk more about this with Mark Giannotto next.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
This ain't a wave or a phase, cause all that fades. This lifestyle's forever when you made. They tweet about the length I made them wait. What the f*** you expect when it got a
Tennessee cape pounded Kentucky on Saturday. A Nevada player tried to fight a fire extinguisher. The wild weekend in college basketball. I'll give you some of the highlights in the next segment. Then Jeff Dawkins, Daily Memphian, to join me a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, he's the lead sports columnist, the commercial appeal. It's Mark Giannotto making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Mark Giannotto, how you doing?
Not bad, Gary. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm talking to you and also monitoring my Delta app. The good thing about my flight being delayed is that I could do the show live from right here in Memphis. Woohoo! The bad thing is that now the flight just keeps getting delayed and delayed, and it's possible I'll never get to New York City tonight.
Yeah, that's the worst. Well, and they also warn you sometimes. I remember one time when my flight got delayed at Memphis, and me and my wife were like, oh, we'll just go home then. You know, we don't live that far from the airport. And they were like, well, just, you know, it's delayed, but it could get moved up. You know, you never know, because it wasn't like a weather issue. It was like a mechanical issue. You never know. And I was like, what you're telling me is I have to sit in here for 4 hours? And they're like, well, we're not saying that, but we're saying, you know, we're not liable if, you know, you go home and something happens.
No, I mean, that's the thing. And so you have to sit there. And then the other problem, and these are very much first world problems, but the Delta Sky Club in Memphis, like, closes early, like at, like, 7 o'clock. Mm. And so I don't, under normal circumstances, I'd just be like, I'll sit in the Sky Club and just work. It doesn't, I've got tons of work to do. But they close that early in Memphis, so I'm in a bad spot right now. Wish me luck, and I'll let you know how it goes. Let's talk Tiger basketball. Impressive performance, I thought, Saturday night. They fought. They had a shot at the end. I think when you're playing a nationally ranked team on the road and you're not a nationally ranked team, if you've got a shot to win in the final minute, like, that's about all you can ask for. I know they didn't get the shot off, turnover, you know how it went. But still, I thought it was an encouraging performance, and I wasn't surprised that Penny and Jeremiah Martin were both relatively upbeat afterward, because they, you know, they went punch for punch with a good basketball team on the road, and they had a shot at the end.
Well, and the thing that I found most, I guess, impressive, that they went shot for shot with Cincinnati on the road. You know, Cincinnati, a team that literally has lost three games at home the last 3 years. You saw all the flaws that Memphis has had this year. I mean, defensive rebounding, turnovers, and an inability to keep teams off the foul line. I mean, they rank outside the top 50 in KenPom in all three of those categories.
Right.
All those things popped up in this game, and they still had a shot there right at the end. So it wasn't like they played some perfect game and had a chance to win at the end. They played sort of like they've been playing, you know, lately and over the course of the season. They followed kind of the trends, and it showed their improvement that there right at the end, they could have won a game in a place very few teams win at. And so I did not disagree with Penny, and just, I guess, the general consensus out of the game was, you know, this proved once and for all that, you know, when this tournament comes here next week, Memphis can win any game against any team in this league, because they could have won at Cincinnati, and very few teams win at Cincinnati.
You mentioned the defensive rebounding issue. They give up a lot of offensive rebounds, have all season, did the other night. I think they rank, let me try to find it, 284th in the country in allowing other teams to grab offensive rebounds. How much of that, and you've watched this team just as much, if not more than I, how much of that is not necessarily by design, but when you're going to constantly try to just go, 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 you're not committed to just securing the rebound first. How much of it is the style of play isn't conducive with being a good defensive rebounding team?
I think part of it is that, you know, just the style of play, when your guards are, leaking out to try and get on the fast break, you're going to have less guys on the defensive glass. The other problem is their bigs, for the most part, are not good rebounders.
Right.
Mike Parks was a better rebounder last year, but in that game, especially in the second half, he was kind of a disaster during his minutes. Isaiah Maurice, not a great rebounder. Kevin Davenport, not a great defensive rebounder. So it's two-pronged. It's that, like, honestly, if you're going pound for pound, probably the best rebounder on this team is Alex Lomax. I think he's like the second or third leading rebounder, and he's 5'10". So I think part of it is just the way they play, but I think part of it is also personnel-wise, they don't have great rebounders. They just don't.
I mean, some of that gets solved if you enroll, guys like James Wiseman, DJ Jeffries, maybe Trendon Wofford. When you have better –
Malcolm Dandridge,
right,
they're all good rebounders.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I think it's something Penny has addressed in his initial signings for 2019. I think it's something he knew going into this season he needed to address his sort of interior.
No question. I'm talking to Mark Giannotto from the Commercial Appeal. You can read him, commercialappeal.com. You've covered basketball for a long time. You've covered – the Tubby Smith teams, you covered this team. Just in general, from game one to this game, how would you evaluate the job the staff's done with the team, the way the team's developed both collectively and individually? By all the metrics, they've gotten better. From the eyeball perspective, they've seemed to have gotten better. I'd be curious what you think.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because ultimately, I mean, when this season kind of turned the corner over the last month, was in reality when Penny went with all the returning guys more and sort of lessened the roles of Tyler Harris, Alex Lomax, Antoine Jones, even Isaiah Maurice. Every game here and now, one of them pops up as a big time contributor, but he's not relying as heavily on the freshman as he was at the beginning of the year. And the other turning point was, him essentially putting this team in Jeremiah's hands. And it's honestly, I think they're basically playing a better version of what they were at the end of last year when they sort of started playing well. It's basically the style they were playing, the way they were playing at the end of last year, but with a faster tempo to take advantage of some of the athleticism you have on the perimeter and with a more aggressive defensive style, I'd say. And so I think he's done a nice job in terms of he's done a nice job in identifying what this team is good at and doing his best to kind of hide their deficiencies, because there's some clear deficiencies like we talked about. But the fact is those deficiencies, a perfect example is this weekend. Those deficiencies popped up in the Cincinnati game, yet they had this coaching staff and this team had itself in position to steal a win on the road. So I think they've done a nice job, especially over the last month, as they've sort of set an established rotation. We saw those first couple months of the year, Penny was changing the lineup, it seemed like, almost every game. And he does a little bit now in terms of if someone's playing well in the first half, he'll start them for the second half. But it seems like there's a more established rotation and and the guys on the team seem to have a better understanding of what their roles are. And that speaks to coaching and sort of breaking through to the teams. I think we all sort of figured recruiting would be fine. Penny would be really good at recruiting. We figured he'd get the fan base back. And I think we wondered about the coaching. And I don't think all the questions are answered, because I don't think he can truly answer them until he's got all his guys in here next year. And when the expectations are going to be a lot higher. But for a first year, I mean, you talked about passing the eye test. It feels like Penny passed the eye test as a coach. He doesn't look overwhelmed. He's out-coached some guys in some games. There's been some instances where he's gotten, you know, coaches have gotten the better of him, but it's not anything glaring. He, you know, even just like down to how he uses his timeouts, he seems on top of everything on the court. He's never seemed overwhelmed, and it doesn't seem like on-court coaching is a deficiency for him. I'm not sure we've figured out whether it's totally a strength yet, but I don't think we were going to find that out until he got his personnel in here anyways.
I'm talking to Mark Giannotto from The Commercial Appeal. He's on Twitter, at MGiannotto. Sort of the point I made in the opening segment is that the at-large possibilities are now, they're done. And perhaps they were unlikely even with a win over Cincinnati. I think they probably were unlikely even with a win over Cincinnati. But the loss to Cincinnati eliminates that conversation. And yet, they still got I don't know what the chances are, but certainly realistic chance to punch a ticket, because there's nobody that's great in this league, significantly better than them, and especially not inside FedEx Forum. And I went and pulled the Sagarin numbers and adjusted them for home court advantage. And what I found is that Vegas can obviously do whatever it wants, but what Sagarin says as of today is that literally nobody would be more than a 4-point favorite over Memphis inside FedEx Forum in the AAC tournament. Houston would be the biggest, obviously. That's three. They were 3.85 points better than Memphis. Cincinnati is 2.30, and UCF is 1.44. And given that oddsmakers already made Memphis a favorite over UCF in that building earlier this year, I don't even think UCF would be favored over Memphis in FedEx Forum. So really, only two teams favored over Memphis in the AAC tournament. And so, barring a surprise, what I'm about to say is true. Barring an upset, because even if they're the fifth seed, they're going to be favored in the first game, favored in their second game. Even if they play a four seed Temple in their second game, they'll be favored over Temple inside FedEx Forum. What that means is that unless they're upset early, they are going to spend not this Saturday but the next in a semifinal game where the point spread is a very manageable number, with an opportunity to play the following day in their home building in front of an amazing crowd for a chance to punch a ticket to the NCAA tournament. That's a pretty good place to be, given that you're probably going to be the fifth seed in your conference tournament. No other fifth seed in a conference tournament has that kind of opportunity.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think on an any game sort of basis, I mean, they can beat anyone in this league. Yeah. I mean, Houston looks beatable. You know, like, Houston's really good, but they look beatable. UCF beat them at home this past weekend. I mean, obviously, Cincinnati, you've twice now had them on the ropes, at Memphis has. They've beaten Temple. They've beaten UCF. The one thing I would say is, and my one concern about this conference tournament for Memphis, if there is a concern, is that, you know, I'd mentioned the deficiencies they have and sort of just the glaring sort of flaws that this team just has to overcome. And quite frankly, Jeremiah Martin has helped them overcome over the past month with how well he's played. But winning four games in a row, I mean, they've done it once this year, and it was involved beating Little Rock, Tennessee State, and Florida A&M.
Right.
And to win the conference tournament, you're going to have to win four games in a row, and three of them are probably going to come against NCAA tournament caliber teams that are at least on the bubble. And can they string together four performances like that in a row? Being at home helps, but I'm just to be quite frank, they have not really done that yet this year. So they will have to do something that they haven't done yet before. And that's not to say it's impossible. In fact, if you bet on that happening, I would say it's a decent bet. But at the same time, they're going to have to prove something, another thing sort of in this season of sort of proving things.
No, I hear you. No, it does make sense. It's a fair assessment. I'm wrapping up here with Mark Giannotto from The Commercial Appeal. Last thing before I let you go, I want to ask you about the Grizzlies. Blew another double-digit lead yesterday. Lost the game. They were up 13 with 6:24 left, up 10 with 4:39 left. Still lose because Oklahoma City closes on a 23-6 run. Do the losses even hurt the casual fan anymore, or has everybody sort of emotionally checked out of this thing?
Well, I just, it's so weird trying to watch these games because you want to watch them saying like, oh, well, like this guy could really mean something for the future. But without Jaren Jackson and without Kyle Anderson out there, two guys who are kind of the, and then on Sunday without Mike Conley playing, like the guys who are really going to form sort of the core of this team moving forward aren't even playing right now. And so it's so hard to invest yourself in what's going on because, you know, how many, you know, I guess some of these guys are going to be back because they have player options, but yeah, it's weird. It's just a weird time to be a Grizzlies fan because, you know, it's looking increasingly likely that they will finish, you know, inside the bottom eight, no matter what they do, even though they're playing competitive basketball, like they're not playing poorly. If anything, they're playing a little better than they were pre-trade deadline with these new players. But it's so hard to invest yourself now, right now, because it's essentially this team of almost like mercenaries. It feels like there's not many guys out there who are definitely going to be here for the long haul, and it's so hard to evaluate things because, you know, two of your biggest focal points moving forward aren't even on the court.
That's Mark Giannotto from the Commercial Appeal. Make sure you read him, commercialappeal.com. Follow him on Twitter, at MGiannotto. Thanks so much, buddy. Terrific stuff as always. I'll catch up with you soon.
All right. Thank you, Gary.
I'll see you. Mark Giannotto from the Commercial Appeal on Twitter, at MGiannotto. When we come back, Tennessee, big win over Kentucky inside Thompson Bowling over the weekend. Clemson lost another close game. There was an incident involving Utah State, Nevada. Lots of interesting college basketball stories. We'll get into them next.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter. Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
It feels so good, it should cost. Brought an alligator, I ain't talking Lacoste. Made me say, like a mix of Master P and Rick Ross. She seen that made me always
Jeff
feel
Hawkins
like
is your award-winning columnist, Daily Memphian. We're going to talk to him a little after 5 o'clock. Talk Tiger basketball and Grizzlies. Jeff Hawkins will be here real soon. But right now, I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 4:44. Story number one.
So the biggest college basketball game of the weekend was not Memphis-Cincinnati. It was actually Tennessee-Kentucky in Knoxville, Thompson Bowling Arena. And if Tennessee was determined to repay Kentucky for humiliating them a few weeks earlier, well, they did exactly that. Kentucky won back on February 16th at Rupp, 88-69. And on Saturday, Tennessee handled Kentucky no problem. They went at 71-52 to improve to 26-3 overall, 14-2 in the SEC. They're tied atop the league standings with LSU, and Kentucky is now a game back of both. We are in the last week of the regular season. And it's interesting. This is what I wrote Saturday over at CBSSports.com, is that if you listen to me, whether it's here or on the CBS Sports Island College Basketball Podcast or anywhere else I discussed Tennessee after they got blown out by Kentucky, what I said was, I'm just going to chalk that up to, this is what can happen when you play a top 10 team on the road. Almost nobody is susceptible, is immune from getting handled in a true road game against a top 10 opponent. Maybe Virginia. Like, maybe Virginia, if you said, GP, Virginia wouldn't get blown out by anybody on the road, You might be right. Tempo is much slower. They're very, very good. You might be right. And if you said, GP, Duke, full strength, ain't getting blown out by anybody on the road. They might lose, but they ain't getting blown out by anybody. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're right. Because Duke at full strength only lost one time all season, and it was on a neutral court in the final 10 seconds to a Gonzaga team that's now ranked number one in the country. Maybe you're right. But I really do think the list stops there. Duke and Virginia. Anybody else is probably susceptible to being blown out on the road. I mean, even that Gonzaga team that's 29-2 and ranked number one in the country went to North Carolina back in December and lost by 13 points, lost by double digits, got handled pretty easily on the road. So I think anybody is susceptible to that except for maybe Duke and Virginia. And then Tennessee backed that loss with a loss to LSU. And I understand that one was a little problematic because Tremont Waters didn't play for LSU. But it was still just a road loss to a top 15 team. And so Tennessee enters this game this past weekend with Kentucky with people having these wild opinions about them. Like Tennessee's fraudulent. Yeah. You know, yeah, Tennessee beat Gonzaga on a neutral court back in December, but then they went 2 months without playing a ranked team, and then they played a ranked team, and they got smashed by Kentucky. Then they played another ranked team, and they got beat by LSU, didn't even have its best player. Tennessee's fraudulent. And I consistently said, I don't believe that. I think Tennessee is heading into this Kentucky game 25-3 with a win over the number one team in the country. And the three losses are to top 15 teams. Full strength Kansas on a neutral court, at Kentucky, at LSU. I know they were just 2-2 in their past four games, but big picture, the three losses are to top 15 teams, all of them away from home. Not only do I think they'll beat Kentucky, I think they're still in play for a number one seed in the NCAA tournament and, you know, a legit national championship contender. And I want to be clear, when it comes to projecting or predicting, I'm not going to always be right because it's sports. You can't. But I never understood why so many people were so quick to jump off of whatever bandwagon Tennessee had created with its incredible 20-3-1 start.
After that Kentucky game?
Yeah, like why? People were
going crazy.
It was one game.
Yeah.
It was one game.
Yep.
And,
it's true.
And did people abandon and people abandoned them.
Yeah.
And now it looks like everybody's back on board.
Yeah.
And really nothing's changed. I was on radio in Knoxville earlier today, and the host said, what have you learned about Tennessee over the past couple of weeks? And I said, nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. Here's what I learned a lot about Tennessee in the first 2 months.
Yeah.
I learned that they weren't just a really good team last season who was going to be really good
again,
because there's a certain ceiling on what you can do when you don't have lottery picks. What I learned in the first 2 months of the season is that Tennessee is great.
Yeah.
And a legitimate national championship contender. And I thought that after they lost to Kentucky. I still thought it after they lost to LSU. I still think it after they beat Kentucky. Like, I haven't learned anything in the past 2 weeks. I learned everything I needed to know about Tennessee in the first 2 months of the season. My opinion hadn't changed at all in the past 2 weeks, even though they're now just 3-2 in their past five games. I'd say the same thing about Kentucky. Nothing that happened on Saturday makes me think anything differently about Kentucky. I know that's what people wanted me to do is like say, oh, see, Kentucky's the one that's fraudulent.
Yeah.
No, Kentucky's really good. Tennessee's really good.
Right.
And with few exceptions, even if you are really good, if you're on the road against another really good team, you might get it handed to you. As we sit here right now, I think Tennessee and Kentucky, those two teams that played Saturday, they've played twice now and blown each other out. I think here's the truth. They're capable, quite clearly, of blowing each other out and also basically anybody else in the country. And so hopefully we get them again at Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. And a lot of people have talked about in the SEC championship game, tournament championship game, it'll be Tennessee against Kentucky. And it could be. But if the rest of this season, this week, plays out the way the computers project, LSU and Tennessee are going to be co-SEC champs. And LSU has a tiebreaker over Tennessee because of that game in Baton Rouge. So LSU would actually be the one seed.
Oh, wow.
Tennessee and Kentucky would be the 2 and the 3 seed. So if you're looking forward to Tennessee-Kentucky again, it'll probably be
same
SEC
bracket.
Tournament semifinal as opposed to championship game. But either way, if we can get round 3, no matter what day it is, that'll be a lot of fun.
Story number 2.
Gonzaga finished its regular season on Saturday with a 14-point win over St. Mary's. They go 16-0 in the West Coast Conference. They win those games, each one by double digits, and by an average of 26.4 points. They're now on a 20-game winning streak, winning those games by an average of 29.9 points. And they have just put together one of the best runs through a conference, most impressive runs through a conference in the history of college basketball. And I know it's the West Coast Conference. It's not the same as running through the ACC or the Big Ten or the SEC or any of those leagues.
Hell, it's not even the same as running through the American Athletic Conference. But Memphis fans should know how this feels.
Yep.
To be able to overwhelm a league and then have people be dismissive of it, discount it. If anybody should be understanding of Gonzaga's situation, it should be Memphis fans who enjoyed that ride under John Calipari through Conference USA when Memphis was doing to CUSA exactly what Gonzaga is doing to the WCC right now. But the thing I keep trying to hammer home is that there's some computer stuff that is really super-duper impressive when it comes to Gonzaga. And these numbers won't mean anything to you without context, but just once I place them in context, I think unless you're just being, for lack of a better word, hater, you're going to have to acknowledge this is one of the best, if not the best, team in the country. Gonzaga now has an adjusted efficiency margin, and the key word there is adjusted. That means it's adjusted to take into account the competition. They now have an adjusted efficiency margin of 35.01. And unless you're like a real basketball nerd, you have no idea whether that's good or bad. I'm telling you it's good. And here's how I can prove to you that it's good. It's 2.96 points better than Gonzaga's adjusted efficiency margin 2 years ago. And that Gonzaga team played for the national championship.
Wow.
That Gonzaga team was with 3 minutes to go in a position to win a national championship, and they were 2.96 points worse from an adjusted efficiency margin perspective than this Gonzaga team we're watching right now.
This is Mark Few's best team, isn't it?
According to the computers, yes, and not even close, really.
Wow.
And Mark Few has had a team that within minutes of winning a national championship. The Villanova team that won the national title last season, this Gonzaga team's got an adjusted efficiency margin that's 1.25 points better than that Villanova's team that won the championship last season. So when you combine that with the fact that they've got a senior point guard who's the all-time assist leader at Gonzaga, John Stockton also played there, by the way. They've got a lottery pick in Rui Hachimura. They've got Brandon Clark, who's got the best player efficiency rating in the country, except for Zion Williamson.
Yeah.
He's second to Zion Williamson.
Wow.
And they got five players in the rotation shooting above 38% from the arc. They got the number one offensive efficiency rating in the country. There's just a whole lot of stuff. If you want to be skeptical of them, do it at your own risk. You're completely ignoring all of the data available. 29-2 right now, and the two losses are to Tennessee on a neutral court in the final seconds and North Carolina at North Carolina. In other words, the only two losses on the resume are losses to teams that are still in position to maybe be one seeds in the NCAA tournament. And, of course, they've got a neutral court win over full-strength Duke. They're the only team in the country to beat Duke at full strength this season. And so just an incredible, incredible run through the regular season for Mark Few's Zags. They won't play again, by the way, till March 11th because their number one seed advances them straight into the semifinals of the WCC tournament. They changed that a few years ago.
Kind of cool.
Well, they didn't want Gonzaga getting to the – they didn't want Gonzaga getting upset, honestly.
Right,
that's what they wanted. So they just said, if you are the one seed, you go straight to the semifinals. It's almost like the Karate Kid tournament or something.
Sure.
So they go straight to the semifinals. They won't play again for a while, but when they play again, they'll probably beat the crap out of somebody.
Story number three.
Incident late Saturday between Nevada, Utah State. This is interesting because Mountain West Conference just released a statement on it.
Yep.
Saying they're basically going to leave it up to teams, Nevada and Utah State, to discipline whomever they feel like they need to discipline or not. But the video was wild. I don't know if you saw it, but cameras were shooting in the hallways.
Yeah. This after the court storm?
So there's a court storm, and then who knows exactly what happened, but the Nevada staff was caught on television cameras saying the fans were touching our players, fans were touching our players. Jordan Caroline, one of Nevada stars, insisted that somebody called him the N-word, and that's what set him off. But when the video starts, what you see is Jordan Caroline. You know how if you're in an arena or a building or anywhere, there's a fire extinguisher behind glass, and like if you need it, you break the glass and grab the fire extinguisher. He punched that glass. So the first thing you see is Jordan Caroline like punching glass, right? So it's kind of wild. And then, of course, there's a lot of yelling, a lot of cussing. It eventually gets calmed down, but it was a weird scene. And I want to be clear, it's unclear if the court storming had anything to do with what happened. But it is also true that the Nevada staff was yelling, the fans were touching our players. And so they thought that something inappropriate or over the line was happening, whether it did or not.
Right.
I don't know. I wasn't there.
But they were yelling that those things did happen. And it's just, and I'm not going to spend much on time on this because we've done it before.
I know where you're going.
The court storming stuff needs to be outlawed. Like for every conference in America, same way it's outlawed in the SEC. It's whatever benefit comes with it, like memories and whatever, a great television visual, it's not worth the inherent dangers. People often say, if they agree with me, they'll say, yeah, GP's right, because one day somebody's going to get seriously injured. What those people don't realize is that's already happened. Google it. Jeff Eisenberg at Yahoo Sports wrote about it several years back. There's a person who, during a court storm, suffered an injury and is now paralyzed. So we're not waiting for something bad to happen. Something bad has already happened. What we're waiting on, probably, is something bad to happen after a Duke game or a Kentucky game, some high-profile game. But the fact that something bad doesn't often happen, to me, does not matter. That's the other pushback I get from people. Oh, GP, we can count on maybe three hands how many times somebody's really gotten actually hurt during a court storm. Usually when there's a court storm, nothing bad happens. And I can acknowledge that's true. I concede the point. Usually when there's a court storm, nothing bad happens. Now follow me here. Usually when somebody drinks and drives, nothing bad happens. They usually make it home without having a wreck. Usually without getting pulled over. If you decide to drink and drive tonight, you will probably be okay. We don't think it's smart, though, do we?
No.
You ready for this one?
Mm-hmm.
If you have unprotected sex tonight with a stranger, you'll probably be okay. You probably won't catch an STD. You probably won't get anybody pregnant. More often than not, everything's fine. We don't think it's smart, do we? So then what are we talking about? If we can acknowledge dumb things are dumb, unnecessary things are unnecessary, and simply because usually everything's okay isn't a reason to rationalize doing them, then the same thing can be applied to court stormings. I understand they look great on television. I've been in the building when they're happening. I just understand that allowing people to run onto a playing surface immediately after an intense game where emotions are high, especially among the visiting players, because they just, by definition, lost a game they were supposed to win, is a recipe for disaster. We have not had this high-profile brawl that would undeniably bring a stop to these things, but if we continue to let them happen, we will have one someday. We didn't get it Saturday night, but we will have one someday. And then when it happens, you know what everybody's going to say?
Well,
I can't believe we let people run onto the court like that. That's crazy.
Right.
And then they'll all be banned. My whole thing is simple. If we know we're going to ban them when that day comes, and we know that day is going to come, why do you wait for that day? It makes no sense whatsoever, and I'll bang the drum every time I have to.
Story number four.
I talked last week a little bit how some of these Memphis games, Texas Tech, home game against Cincinnati, I guess even road game against Cincinnati, you could take them and really like change a possession here or there, and Memphis' whole season is different. Like they're in the NCAA tournament right now. Now, that's just basketball, I guess, but still, it doesn't make it untrue, and it's something that if I were a coach, I would stress all the time. Like every possession is important because two possessions in this game, one possession in this game, two possessions in this game could change our whole season. Stay focused. Every dribble. An even better example of that is Clemson. Clemson lost 81-79, two-point game, to North Carolina on Saturday in its home arena. And the Clemson Tigers are now 17-12. They're still projected to make the NCAA tournament, but they've had now 2 1-point losses and 3 2-point losses. 2 1-point losses and 3 2-point losses.
And a close one this weekend,
That means if you take literally one possession in those five games and flip them.
Yep.
In other words, this missed shot's a made shot or vice versa. They would be 22-7 right now as opposed to 17-12 right now.
Yep.
Nobody has been on the wrong end of late game situations quite like Clemson this season. So
that coach is on the hot seat too, isn't he?
Well, he just got an extension, but he was on the hot seat before that.
Right.
And as I've forever insisted, once you're on the hot seat, you don't get
you
off,
don't get
of,
off
it.
Of it.
So
and he's probably not going to make the tournament either.
Well, probably is because they're projected now, although the bubble usually shrinks, always shrinks as Selection Sunday
approaches. They're going to have to win more than they lose going forward. They certainly haven't eliminated themselves, but they could be safely in the field, even ranked in the top 25 right now, if you took only one possession in five different games and flipped them around. Just a stressful way to live if you're a college basketball coach, but that's the way Brad Brownell has been living lately. I wish him luck going forward. Jeff Calkins is up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.